Welcome back. Final two segments of the weekend edition of the KE Report, the last weekend edition of 2024. And again, a replay of the first show from 2024 to get more of an outlook on what people were expecting this year. Please, everyone, keep in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts on what these projections were from the beginning of the year and some of your favorite guests from the year so that we really can continue to cater this show to all of you, our longtime listeners and also our new listeners. Let us know what brought you into listening to our show, whether it's on our website, your podcast player, YouTube, or the radio. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. We are chatting with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago, also editor of the Lyons Share Pro website, which I should note, Dana is running a holiday sale, extending it another week for all of you listening. You get 20% off at the Lyons Share Pro, so I will post a link within the weekend show posting where you can take advantage of that. And Dana, as we usually do with you, we're going to go around to a number of different markets and sectors to get your more technical outlook on these sectors. Before we get into any individual sectors, though, it seems like the environment we are in here where a lot of markets and a lot of sectors are trading hand in hand with each other. 2023 was a good year for a number of different areas, especially at the end of the year where we saw a more broad-based recovery, money hitting a wider range of stocks and moving those higher as we turned over the calendar. Seems like we're getting a little bit of weakness on the back of all that strength to close out 2023. Dana, what do you do at the beginning of these years when, look, we are seeing everything trade together and now we're seeing a little bit of a counter trend move?
Yeah, thanks and happy new year, guys. January, you know, we spoke about this just prior to coming on. January is a little bit different that we perceive than any of the other months of the year in that it typically is kind of it tends to be like a whiplash type of a month. So you see a lot of counter trend moves during the month that quickly get reversed. So whereas, you know, a lot of the old school pundits will look at the January barometer, so goes the year as January goes. I see less and less of that and more of however January goes, we tend to see a reversal of that. And I would not be surprised to see that just because of how the intermediate term conditions are. The market data, specifically within our quantitative models, is still strong in the equity market, portraying that, like you mentioned, the broader strength in the markets, not just the Magnificent Seven. You had a lot of broader participation in the rally, especially in the latter part of November, December. So you've got a decent foundation under the market still to perpetuate this rally. And what I think you're seeing is, as we spoke about, you know, a couple of weeks ago into the end of the year, you saw some short-term froth in terms of some momentum conditions that were very overbought, historically overbought, and also some short-term sentiment readings that got a little bit frothy. So you had conditions ripe for a pullback. And then you had, like I said, when we switched calendars to the new year, you often see kind of a quick reversal of the trends that were in place. And we're seeing that right now. So at the moment, we were a long way away from seeing any data come in that makes us suspect of the durability of the post-October rebound. In other words, we think there's still got more legs to the rally and certainly would put our bets on this just being more of a short-term pullback, correcting some of that overbought nature in both sentiment and momentum. So are we looking to buy the dips for the most part in risk assets? Yes.
Well, Dana, I think what you just said is so significant, and I'd like you to unpack the concept a little bit more of looking at things in different time frames, because I think a lot of people get hung up on that day's price action or, you know, hey, how January kicked off the year, and they're extrapolating that out through the rest of the year. But really, what you just outlined is very cogent in the sense that, yeah, in the short term, things were overbought. They were getting a little frothy at the end of last year. The sentiment readings were a little high. Now sentiment swinging back down. But you can separate the short-term action from the medium-term outlook in your model. So maybe just speak to looking at the markets in different time frames and knowing when to buy the dip and when a larger trend's at foot.
Right. Well, if you got so highly influenced by every swing in the market, you'd think everything was a bottom or a top, right? So you'd be perpetually either fearful or greedy. So you have to kind of pick your time frame. And after many, many years and decades of study, we settled really on the concept of an intermediate term time frame for our models, which is generally from 2 to 6 months, sometimes more. But it generally encompasses moves in the market that are large enough that we think it's worth trying to capture or avoid. So you're going to get decent moves in the equity market of, you know, 10, 20% or more within that time frame, as opposed to, you know, more day trading or swing trading, where you might get smaller, you know, 3, 4, 5% moves that maybe to us is not necessarily worth trying to capture every single ounce of each one of those short-term swings or iterations. You know, as long as that data that distinguishes that intermediate term trend, according to our models, is still bullish, which it is now, and is likely to continue to be bullish unless we see a massive rug pull, then we want to continue to concentrate on the upside and look for opportunities into pullbacks to add to our long positions, as opposed to we see a short-term pullback and we're trying to reverse directions. You know, if conditions were long in the tooth, if our models were a little dicey and more suggestive of a potential top, then we'd probably be getting more defensive into conditions like this. But the way it is now in the intermediate term still looks good to us. So into any short-term pullback, which, like I mentioned, we were frothy in terms of momentum sentiment, there is some short-term room on the charts down to more significant support levels. So we could get come down further, but we want to focus right now on using that short-term weakness to add to long positions that we think will continue to work in that intermediate term.
So let's talk about potential levels for where the S&P could correct to, because it was almost a perfect two-month rally that went up about 17%. So far, the markets, just in a few days, including the tail end of last year, have corrected a little over 2%. So where do you see the next stopping point, a good buying opportunity for the S&P?
Well, for the S&P, it's not much support until maybe decent support around maybe that 46.30-ish level, I guess. And then the major support comes in down in the lower 4,500s. Don't know if we'll get there. If we do get there, we'll probably be buying it very aggressively. But we like to, as you know, we like to cast a wider net out there in terms of potential investments. So we're not just staring at the S&P chart. We're looking for relative strength in the market. So there are pockets of things, specifically in the tech sector, which was the most extended and the most vulnerable, that have corrected the most since the end of last year, really this week, I guess, that have already pulled back and already hit some at least initial levels of support where, considering our intermediate term more rosy outlook, we want to be looking for opportunities to get to dip our toes in or to increase our long exposure. So we've been dipping in a little bit this week in some of those tech names that have corrected the most, that are now already hitting some measures of support. Again, there's room, certainly room on the charts for further downside in the near term. And if we do, you know, if that downside does manifest, we'll certainly be a little bit more aggressive in buying that dip.
Well, Dana, you've also noted to us that in addition to the growth side of it, the tech and some of the small cap stocks that rallied hard in the IWM last year, that you're also looking again at value and that there's some relative strength in some of the value funds you're looking at. Maybe break down the contrast between growth and value.
Sure. And obviously, growth has been the name of the game for really several decades. a couple of years ago, we saw value make a stab at reversing that longer-term trend. We still think there's a good chance that more of a secular shift is in the works for towards value. But we've seen, you know, over the last year, obviously growth pretty much rose from the dead and said, you know, the run's not over. So we've seen a nice bounce back in growth. But at the same time, value, after taking a backseat last year for most of the year to growth, has rebounded pretty well. And specifically looking at some of the what they call pure growth and value, pure style indices. And basically those strip out any remnants of the other side of the coin. So looking at pure value indices, it strips out any of the growth aspects. And several of those indices have really bounced back strong. And interestingly enough, it's really the small and mid-cap that have bounced back the strongest. So one ticker symbol being ETF, the mid-cap pure value ETF ticker symbol is RFV, has, after bouncing at all-time highs a couple of years ago and consolidating for a couple of years, just broke out a couple of weeks ago or a month ago. Nice breakout, pulling back towards that breakout level. But we think that's got massive upside going forward. And it's a small cap brother, which would be a ticker symbol, RZV, which in studying all the growth and value indices, this particular index or fund, from our study, really more so than any other style index, really is a barometer that we found for kind of the risk off, risk on phenomenon. And when it's going well, generally the market in general is on good footing, and vice versa. So right now, after it kind of did the same thing that the mid cap fund did, you know, we had a nice recovery off of the COVID lows, went to all time highs, and for the last couple of years has kind of been consolidating that move, but it's held up very well. More so than something like the Russell 2000, more popular small cap index. In fact, it just in the move towards the end of the year, RZV did challenge or test the previous all-time highs and consolidating that. So that's another one that into this pullback we'll be looking to buy. And if that breaks out, then it's got considerable potential upside there. And as I mentioned, it's historically been a very good barometer for risk on versus risk off. So when that's going good, the market in general tends to go good. So that would be an extremely good, extremely constructive sign for the market overall, at least, you know, at the time being.
Okay. So overall, still in that, I guess, more bullish camp for the markets, and seeing even more reason to, I guess, jump on any corrections here because of the more broad-based recovery. Let's move over to the bond market then. And look, for as much as we've had you on the show, we do understand that you do see kind of that bigger picture change in rates, where we're probably not going back to those ultra low interest rates. But look, we've seen a lot of volatility in rates to end the year. 10-year moved up to almost 5%, then moved whole way down below 4% just in a matter of a couple months. Is, again, kind of rebounding at the tail end here. Bonds, that means that they're selling off, which kind of is going hand in hand with a little bit of the sell-off that we're seeing in U.S. markets. Where's the sweet spot for bonds or for yields currently?
Right. And yeah, as we have talked about it for years, we do think that 60-year cycle in bond yields bottomed out in 2020. So that long bull market in bonds, we think, is over. So probably go ahead and higher in terms of bond yields for several decades to come. And probably people would be shocked to hear, but probably headed back up into double digits eventually. But nothing goes in a straight line. So looking at some key retracement levels going back to the highs in the early 80s, the first key level is around that 4%, just above that 4%, where yields did top out in 2022, went sideways for about a year. And then really during the fall, when we saw the weakness in equities, we saw bond yields break out above that level. And that's really the line in the sand. We did rally up towards 5%. then pulled back over the last several months, coinciding with the equity rallies. We've seen 10-year yields pull back all the way down to test that key breakout level around 4%, even inch a little bit lower. So this is a massive development in financial markets. I think right here is whether or not bond yields hold these that breakout level around 4%. If they do, we've got a lot of upside straight up towards probably 6.5% next. On the flip side, if they cannot hold that 4-ish percent level, then we've got a false breakout on the charts, and that would open up further downside in yields, probably 3.25%, maybe down back down towards that 270 level again that we saw last year. So big moment, big test here in bonds. We have just in the bounce in yields this week, we have gone back long, hinting that we do think evidence points to maybe a false breakout and a drop back down below that 4%-ish level in the 10-year. Just looking, for example, at one piece of data, if you look at the TLT, for example, and look at the amount of volume that's gone into that fund, especially at the lows in October and even during the rally since, it's been a massive amount of volume. So you see the most volume at lows in the market, and it's been interesting to watch the volume maintain itself during the bounce. So that would be one hint for us that, okay, maybe it was a false breakout in yields, and there is much more to this pullback in yields, bounce in bond prices. And certainly that, you know, we, as you guys know, I don't like to play that intermarket analysis, but that would certainly coincide, you know, further drop in yields would probably coincide nicely with the continuation of the rally in equities eventually after whenever this short-term correction is over.
Well, Dana, yeah, I know you don't like doing the intermarket analysis, but a pullback in rates isn't just good for the equity markets. It's also been a boon to gold. Gold is very closely correlated with interest rates, and when they're pulling back, gold seems to do well. We had a pretty strong close to the end of last year in the gold market, but how are you seeing the setup for the yellow metal and the precious metals sector in general for 2024?
As we've spoken about in the past, we're pretty positive on gold itself, especially. Pretty much carved out a kind of a modified cup and handle pattern since those highs back in 2011. We matched those highs in the COVID year, and basically have maintained those gains pretty well, even moving sideways over the last 3.5 years or so. And the fact that we've held up well, I would say, argues for an eventual breakout there in the yellow metal and another significant up leg there for gold. So we are staying long, gold especially. Obviously, the miners have had a bit of a tougher road of it for whatever reason. We are long the miners as well to a smaller extent. But if we do, obviously, if we get that breakout in gold, that should be a boon to the miners as well. Obviously, that they'll have to contend with whatever the equity market in general is doing. But a breakout in gold obviously should be a big boon to the miners, and I would suspect that's on tap. Whether it happens this year, I don't know. I would say we're pretty well positioned for that to happen this year. And we are again, we're long gold right now, but. With the specific timing of that, I don't know, but you could say, yes, we are certainly bullish on precious metals, especially gold.
Can you give us some more insights on what you are seeing in the gold miners chart? So let's just focus on GDX and what a breakout in your eyes would look like, what levels you're watching for, just what you see in this chart that, in all fairness, does look just slightly different than the actual gold chart.
Yeah, for sure. Like I mentioned, you got different forces pulling on the miners. Obviously, you've got the precious metals itself, and then you have obviously the equity ties within the miners to the rest of the equity market. And, where we saw, you know, in 2020, we saw gold rally all the way back to those to match those highs in 2011. Interestingly, GDX bounced back to just about exactly tagged that 61 retracement from highs in 2011. So lag quite a bit, continues to lag quite a bit. Why that is, I'm not sure in terms of a fundamental reason, but certainly has lagged. So we'll wait till better technical setup to get very aggressive on the long side. But we are long, like I mentioned. I would say break above 33 would open up a move towards the highs from last year on 36. But you've got a series of lower highs ever since that 2020 high that we saw that obviously leaves some damage, some carnage on the charts that makes it a little bit tougher road to hoe. But certainly, if we get that breakout in gold, that'd probably be about as good a factor as the miners could hope for. And again, I would suspect that would be coming at some point.
Well, Dana, let's move over to another market widely followed by our audience, and that's the energy space. How are you looking at oil, nat gas, but also the oil stocks?
Yeah, oil is kind of middle of the road. We've been talking about it, you know, for several months. Kind of stuck in a trading range like so many of the commodities, to be honest. It's hard to get for us to get too aggressive either way. The dollar as well, you know, kind of been stuck in a trading range, I would say, right now. In the short term, benefit of the doubt is probably to the downside still in crude oil. With that being said, we do have a decent allocation to energy stocks that have been in a nice uptrend for the last couple of years. Obviously, have underperformed since the low in October, but that's mostly because they outperformed, you know, especially during that equity pullback in the fall. So we still have a series of higher highs, higher lows in the energy space. Oil services, especially, we continue to like OIH, a bigger symbol, but we do like the energy stocks. And that's one space, and I think we talked about it last time. If you're looking for areas to buy that aren't, you know, extended, that didn't get too frothy, energy is one area that you might think about in terms of sectors that are still in the intermediate term, demonstrating decent relative strength, and in the short term are not frothy. They don't have that quick air bubble or air pocket below them on the chart like so many things that have bounced so much over the last couple months potentially do.
Yeah, looking at XLE and OIH, just going back to 2020, that's a very good point, Dana. It's been kind of a consistent rise. Higher lows and mostly higher highs, except for in XLE, the energy sector ETF here that was, again, kind of range-bound throughout pretty much a year now. Does that mean that if we continue to see these higher lows, that these are, in a way, these sectors just continuing to build up momentum to the upside? Could there be a more aggressive move to the upside in either of these?
Yeah, you know, with the oil services, the higher highs, higher lows just signifies, you know, there's continued demand out there. And it shouldn't be surprising, even though, you know, we're a couple of years into the bounce. If you scroll back, you know, we saw basically a straight down move in oil services for, you know, the better part of a decade or so. There is certainly some pent up, just some mean reversion potential to the upside in terms of potential allocation funds coming in or rotation funds coming in. So from that standpoint, I think even though we've seen a decent bounce, there's plenty more room to go considering the longer term. Still not frothy or even richly valued whatsoever. In terms of XLE, kind of a different story. That's back up, kind of testing near those highs that we saw, you know, about a decade ago. The good thing is we saw that rally from 2020 into 2022, and it's held up nicely. We haven't seen the higher highs like we've seen in oil services, but it's pretty much consolidated right near those highs that we saw starting a couple years ago and putting in potentially a type of ascending triangle. So we're seeing higher lows. We're seeing basically approximate tops. So that would point to, at least, you know, classical chart analysis would point to an eventual breakout there and another extension of the rally that we saw starting back in the COVID year.
All right, Dana, thank you for covering so many different sectors with us and sharing what your models are pointing to, a lot of it being some more shorter-term trading. But hey, you've played these markets and the swings pretty much perfectly over the last couple of years, which has been a wild ride for a number of investors. And it has shown that you can't get too dug into any one position or any one narrative because markets change and all sectors can kind of follow along, and some of them do actually play off of each other. But again, don't get too bogged down into one narrative, especially in times like these where there are a lot of things changing in the economy and especially with central banks. Dana, thank you for your time on this weekend show. Everybody, thanks for tuning in to the first weekend show of 2024. We hope you all enjoyed it, and as always, keep in touch with us through email and on our website. Pay attention to all the daily editorials and company updates we record throughout the week. Dana, everybody, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.